get an extra special, extra hour of Music for Human Beings, so that's going to be great. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Beauty. Marhaban. Yes, yes, marhaban to you. I am a Dr. Jalis Sakran, and I welcome you. Well, here we are today, once again, freezing. No, I am not talking about the weather. I'm talking about the spiritual coldness that we are all experiencing in these winter months. Nothing quite cools one's body like the weather, or one's spirit like being alone. It is so pleasant, of course, then, to be joined here by Aurora, who keeps my spirit warm as a jacket keeps my body warm. Aurora, welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Jalis.
Aurora is, of course, a speech specialist.
A vocal therapist, Dr. Jalis.
Tell us about vocal therapy.
Well, it's a complicated procedure. And of course, we've discussed it many times on this show. Vocal therapy entails so many different things. It entails soothing the soul through the voice of others. It entails fixing your own soul through your own voice. Much as the music that we now listen to, the man chanting behind my voice with that beautiful ooh. That sort of open sound allows you to access the base of your own soul, to sort of be entranced and embrace the rhythm that lies beneath you. And of course, there are many vocal exercises that you can do from your own home. You can chant, you can just lie on your back and dream and allow your voice to express what you're feeling. The world has so many possibilities. So many possibilities that you can reach through your soul and through the different planes that you can reach through meditation. It's sort of beautiful. Perhaps we should lay back for a second and listen to the chanting man in the background and be enfolded in it.
Very enlightening view, Aurora.
Thank you, Dr. Jalis. Would you like to discuss perhaps some of your art?
Well, let's carry on with the vocal therapy. I think that's very interesting. I mean, we have, I think, ample time to return to discussions of the skin. The voice, however, is really the greatest instrument ever created.
Well, I wouldn't agree with that entirely. Of course, I love the voice, and it's my passion, and it's how I express myself, and it's how I communicate with others around me. But at the same time, the skin is what shields you and what unites you. And of course, you've got all sorts of practices that involve sensations that deal with the skin. It's much like that very coveted jacket in the winter. It just embraces you.
Oh, yes, of course, the skin is an excellent covering. But my feeling is that as far as instruments go, the best thing that can be done with the skin is to make a drum. But the voice is so multi-layered and so incredible. Voice is like a flute. Or like a harp. All of these various tones become possible, and you combine these tones and you are able to achieve an emotional connection that is not really possible with the skin alone. The skin betrays you.
The skin betrays you, and yet it leads to the most intimate of interactions, of human interactions. Of course, they're not widely applicable because we're not experiencing the skin embrace with a great number of people. But of course, we're experiencing a vocal embrace with almost everyone we meet.
And a vocal embrace, therefore, you are saying, is both less valuable and more valuable.
Yes, exactly. In that you can experience it with so many more people and be enriched in it. But at the same time, it is less special because it is so accessible.
But, you know, the general vocal embrace, there are qualities to it. One can be struck by the voice just as one is struck by the skin. But and the sensational qualities of being embraced vocally are profound also. You know, the varieties of vocal embraces are very very distinct and spread wide. There are so many things that one can say and generate various feelings in the counterpart.
Yes, I'd almost say that there are like vocal headlocks. For example, when you interact in an argumentative fashion with a coworker or a boss or even an elder. And of course, there are the light vocal embraces when you whisper with a friend, or the very, very strong hugs when you first see a loved one that has been far away for so long.
Yeah, I think that another point here is that the voice is often the most direct instrument of the mind. That when I would like to connect mentally with someone, I do this by speaking with them. And the voice can accomplish this on a number of levels. I've recently started exploring communication using sign, using various gestures, which is a sort of transfer of this instrument from the voice to the hands that you would.
Do you find any major differences in the type of communication that you can achieve?
They are different. They are different. But the, you know, neither one, I think, has clear benefits. Perhaps the greatest benefit of vocal communication is simply how widespread the use is.
You feel somewhat strangely, differently enriched by the skin communication that you are currently trying.
Certainly, I mean, one of the most enriching things is to, you know, as a person who enjoys music, particularly vocal music, to see that accompanied by the appropriate communications using gestures. Is really quite profound.
So what sort of techniques would you suggest for one who is feeling cold in these winter days? Do you have any any skin remedies for dryness, for example, or meditative healing powers?
For skin dryness or spiritual dryness?
Well, there, I believe that, well, for example, when I have a patient with dry voices, like with cracking voices, that I always find that there's some spiritual reason behind it. So I believe everything is interlocked.
But there really is a difference between... I wouldn't argue that, for instance, a change in diet could not have some effect on the skin. But I would maintain that that there is a difference between being hungry and having dryness.
What sort of difference would you say that is?
Between being hungry and having dryness on the skin?
No, I mean, of course there are very different sensations entirely, but they can be linked. Can they not?
Yeah, I suppose I could see how they could be regarded as linked things, that they may indeed be related. But, you know, I would not treat them the same way. If someone came to me with hunger in their belly, I would not begin rubbing ointment on their belly.
So what sorts of ointments would you suggest for winter times? Just to get that nice protective layer.
A simple lotion can be very effective.
And yet the other day I was searching for a lotion and found that they're filled with chemicals, just unnatural chemicals.
Well, I'm not really sure what is so unnatural about chemicals. I mean, it's not as though they were, you know, invented by some evil person. They are derived also from substances that appear in nature. And, I mean, I hear a lot about various fools speaking about, you know, this or that substance being natural, and you know, how wonderful it must be that this is, you know, a stone or a nut or what have you. But there are poisonous nuts. I mean, why they're perfectly organic and natural, but they can remain poisons, and I would not recommend that anyone eat them.
But don't you believe that through so much processing and so many lab techniques and everything?
Well, I think that particular chemicals should be avoided, just as particular nuts are avoided. There is no reason to say that, well, this has been processed and therefore it is, you know, criminally harmful. You know, it's... It is its own thing. Well, if you would like to be very natural, you can ring us. Our number is 617-253-8810, and we have two lines available.
It's always enriching to increase the circle.
But it's not always natural.
No, it's not.
But we welcome the experience.
So do you do any therapeutic practices? How do you run your patient interface?
My patient interface? You mean how do I actually interact myself with the patients?
Yes.
Well, it really depends on the patient. Mind you, I have not done actual care in many years, but you know, some patients are more comfortable with a Western style lab coat wearing, a stethoscope bearing doctor, and I can provide that experience, but I find that I'm more relaxed if I approach each patient as a problem that must be solved. And I prefer to wear a traditional robe when I'm just as I would at the house. You know, I'm not playing a game. You know, so why should I dress up? If I were an actor, then I would require a costume.
Well, but at the same time, I mean, I have noticed that you do wear the same exact clothes every time, but do you think it's appropriate to wear your pajamas everywhere?
Well, it's traditional in my culture that we wear these sorts of clothes. So I'm not really sure. Obviously, I care about the patient experience, but beyond that, the social norms are not really something that doctors should be afraid of challenging, I feel.
Everything is irregular.
I'm not sure we should try to be normal or natural.
Are you losing your spiritual path?
I think it's a very spiritual thing to not try to embrace something that's not worth embracing. Normalcy or naturalness or these other labels. It's enough to be who you are.
But I believe that some of what we are is entangled in the world around us and in the nature of the situation that we were born in, that we are dealing with so many of our problems, such as diabetes and obesity epidemics and a high mortality rate due to heart disease and cancer, because we are dealing with unnatural substances so often.
I think that the thermia may be a problem with other things. I think that our society, our environment may be the things that we should change. But, you know, in particular that it would be toxins or chemicals.
As opposed to other substances.
Or as opposed to simply eating more than we should.
Well, we seem to have a caller.
Caller, marhaban. Caller? Caller, can you hear us? Marhaban? Hello, caller.
Well, they seem to have slipped away.
Perhaps we lost them to the... to the ether. Well, just in case anyone would like to call in and just be there, our number is 617-253-8810. Let's see if that caller is going to try us again.
Hello.
Hello, marhaban.
Hello, marhaban. Welcome to the air.
Thank you. Thank you, Professor Levine.
Yes, indeed. This is Professor Levine.
Welcome, Professor.
Yes, I have to first say that it's very, very deep sorrow of mine that I wasn't able to join you physically with my presence.
Well, where are you this week, Dr. Levine?
Well, as you may know, I've been traveling. I'm currently en route to a conference being held in Papua New Guinea.
On what topic?
Well, this conference is about the sort of esoteric, demonic sexual practices as found in the Jewish Talmud. And it's very interesting to hear the show, Music for Human Beings, as a listener rather than as a participant. And I have to say, it was a very enlightening experience.
But it's delightful that any of our listeners can at any time become participants.
Yes, I find it truly amazing. It's an amazing experience. But this was really nice because, of course, the journey to Papua New Guinea is very arduous. And it's composed of many legs, including flying on the airplane and driving in the automobus and bicycling. And my most recent segment involved hang gliding over several ravines. So I wasn't able to call you during those flights of journey, but I was able to bring my shortwave radio with me to listen to the show. And it really warmed my heart as the wind was rushing through my hair and keeping me alive.
Well, that's beautiful, Professor Levine. And it also brings us back to that sort of relationship we were discussing earlier between the skin interaction and the vocal interaction, and that anyone can be a listener and experience that sort of vocal embrace.
Yeah, I really like this connection that you drew between the skin as an instrument of contact between human beings or souls, and the voice being another form of contact, of course, the voice in the form of both speaking and singing, and of course whistling, which we all know that Dr. Dallas is quite an expert in.
Yes, certainly, like very many years of solitude have brought a great deal of facility to my lips.
And I have to say, in my own memory and experience, many of my days, which otherwise would have been spent in sorrow, were greatly lifted by hearing the great doctors whistling through the halls of many institutes of learning.
Well, thank you very much for that, Professor Levine.
Yes. And of course, I myself am a very great advocate of human skin contact, and I feel that in our current culture, we don't feel comfortable enough to be able to touch each other as much as we really should be able to.
Yeah, I feel like particularly there is a dearth of contact between heterosexual males in this society. It is considered a sign of latent homosexuality or some other feeling, which I feel is unnecessary.
And I feel perhaps it might be changing with the new genre of shows called, I think they refer to it as bromances.
Bromance.
Bromance, yeah. I think the bromance genre, the new genre of movie, which explores the platonic love which is possible and can be now openly expressed between heterosexual males.
That it's considered an acceptable expression.
Well, I think it's becoming more acceptable, and I would really like to help engender this acceptability.
I'm not sure what the fear is by the people that are really avoiding contact. And it seems to me that, on the contrary, a person who was afraid or who associated physical contact with sex would be more afraid of touching the members of the opposite sex.
Yes.
And of those two, those listeners who have never met Dr. Dallas before, he embraces everyone on contact because just
with I might say a very powerful hug.
Yes.
I mean, I think the first time I met Dr. Dallas, my ribs were not sort of ready yet for that kind of embrace, and several of them were cracked as a result.
Well, I think, Professor Levine, you exaggerate somewhat.
Well, maybe more of a stress fracture, but still, I did have to spend about a week in the hospital.
It's one of these habits that you wish to immediately dispense with all illusion, and to tell someone, welcome, here is a place where you have a friend.
And I've heard that this idea in some cultures is taken to an extreme where upon meeting a new person, one will actually remove physically a part of their body and give it to the new person and say, here is a part of me which you may now keep for yourself.
What sorts of pieces are removed, Professor?
Well, I mean, depending on the importance of the occasion, it can range anywhere from a piece of skin to a finger or an even bigger limb.
I know that there are traditions to showing loyalty to someone by removing and depositing a part of the body, and I think some of the greatest examples of this actually come from Jewish literature.
Right, of course, the Bar Kokhba revolt against the Romans. The tradition says that in order to enter the army of the revolting nationalists, one would have to, cut off a finger to show loyalty to the leader.
And what way to prove that you were not a Roman spy than by showing a willingness to sacrifice part of your flesh for right. the cause?
And how even more powerful it would be if one were willing to give up a part of their body for a complete stranger.
Indeed.
Can anyone really be a complete stranger? And we all come from a common source, do we not?
Yes, I believe that's true. In the Jewish mystical tradition, it's taught that we all share a common soul. In fact, Adam, the first created man, can be viewed allegorically as the root soul of all mankind.
And so that with every birth, we have simply another branch point of our common soul.
Another organ, one might say. In fact, one can think of all of humankind as forming a sort of celestial body, which is the body of Adam. And every soul which is part of this body, which is born, inhabits a certain region of that body, and that region of the body directs their purpose in life and what their ultimate mission is.
I think some people are fingernails and they guard other very sensitive but critical parts of the body.
Provide a good scratching where required.
And some people are the beautiful voice of the body.
I think we all know, we all have a friend who is clearly from the genital regions of that celestial body.
That's sort of... And I know that you are thinking of reproduction again, but since we are one body, that enormous body would not need to reproduce. I mean, it would have no gender. It's a single being.
Or it might have the gender of both, or the genitals of both genders.
It's possible, but they would simply be symbolic.
Well, on that level, I think everything is symbolic, but of course one can view human reproduction as a form of returning to that unitary bond in the first place, this sort of cycle of creation and destruction with a single hand.
It's like returning a library book.
Exactly.
After borrowing it for decades. It's like...
Which, of course, is probably punishable by imprisonment in many countries.
It certainly seems that it should be. The punishment is extremely mild for depriving so many people of, you know, depending on the work, very, very nice piece of writing.
Yes. Now, going back to this question of skin versus voice contact between humans, I wonder if somehow these wires can cross occasionally so that one can experience human intercourse by melding the voice with the skin, by, say, humming on someone's body.
Well, indeed, it has been known to occur that a variety of sensations could be experienced simultaneously, that one sensory experience would cause another experience by a different sensory organ. For instance, there are there are people that I have met that have described light as causing a particular sound, or sound as causing a sensation of light. And that's really fascinating. And actually, I believe that part of that is in all of us.
Well, I speak from personal experience here, because I have personally experimented with this notion of having someone hum with their mouth into your skin, let's say a tune or a melody, and then if one trains oneself, one is able to actually hear the melody being hummed into one's skin. And at first I would just have a single person hum against my skin and I would appreciate the melody, but my desire grew stronger to sort of take this to the maximum amount.
Mm-hmm. To the natural closure point.
To its limit, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so I assembled a group of about 100 people, and I had them perform all of Beethoven's symphonies humming against my body simultaneously.
I think there is some advantage to having a number of students and being a professor.
Exactly. And of course, I had to choose people with very small mouths and small bodies, because I had to be able to fit all their mouths on my body simultaneously, and each one had to play a single role in the symphony orchestra.
Mm. And can you describe the sensation that you experienced?
It was like, so normally if one listens to a symphony, one hears the symphony, but the symphony is external to one. This was like I was the symphony, I was the music itself. The music was in my body and in my soul.
So you were Beethoven.
I essentially was Beethoven and his entire audience throughout history in a single moment. There's quite an amazing spiritual experience.
I have to say that I've had similar experiences without any skin contact. I mean, as part of a choir, and of course with my voice, I was always the part of the alto, the supporting line. And as an alto, you can feel the melodies of every soprano, of every second soprano, every countertenor, all of them. You can feel all of their lines coursing through your body, because you are the bass, and you are tying all of their expressions together, and it's such a beautiful feeling to be part of that entire orchestra and to be feeling it so strongly in your body and to be experiencing it in a sort of out-of-body way as well.
Well, Aurora, which songs in particular made you have this sensation most strongly?
I must say it was the dirges that were most expressive.
Now, I've heard that the alto is the most sought-after voice in the choral orchestra. Is that correct?
Well, not really. There are many other voices that are much rarer.
That are more difficult, you mean? Like a range that is more rare?
Yes, I mean, of course, it's not really about just the range, though. It's about the ability to hold the note and the timbre of your voice. Of course, those with similar ranges can be sorted into alto or second soprano based on their timbre and which notes they're most comfortable on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that a voice that, under certain circumstances, would be able to produce the entire range of a second soprano would actually prefer in some situations due to the texture of the particular voice to take on the role of an operatic alto.
Yes, and that's exactly what is happening with me. I can, under most circumstances, hit a high G or a high A, which encompasses the normal roles for second soprano, but I do prefer the alto roles because I have those low notes and that rich timbre on the lower notes, and I can hold and sustain the melody very well.
I personally, when I sing, I prefer to stay in the note range beyond the G, so that sort of the H, the I, the J, and the K notes.
And of course, Professor Levine.
Yes, I really enjoy, these are the hidden notes, of course, the sort of, one might say, the mystical notes of the scale. Normally these are hidden, and as you descend from A to G, you wrap around back to A. This is the normal course of singing. But one is also able to unlock the hidden second upper scale, which extends from H, I, through, in my experience at least, the J and K.
Are you speaking, of course, about the 12-note octave?
Well, no, I'm speaking about the notes within the 8-note octave, which are beyond the 8-note octave, both within and beyond simultaneously.
Outward and upward.
Right. And I one time did attempt to assemble a choir of people who would sing only within this hidden range of notes. The H, the I, the J, and the K.
Can everyone hear these notes, or are they a thing that are, this is more often experienced?
Well, we know that some species are very good at hearing these notes. For example, the honeybee and the killer ant are both especially adept. Interestingly, canines are not able to hear these notes.
Yeah, they are so able to hear the other notes.
They can hear very high notes within the range of A, B, C, D, E, F, and G.
Mm-hmm.
But they are not able to hear the hidden and within scale.
And I've been asked repeatedly to describe certain sensations that I have had, and I think that some things escape description. That when you are eating and wishing to describe the flavor of something, you use common reference points, but to a blind person, how could you describe the color red? To a deaf person, how could you describe the sound of a flute? It's without reference points, you know, as you do not have.
Well, I believe you can use some reference points with the deaf. So, for example, I think you start with the sounds associated with the body, because even the deaf person experiences the sensation of the body, and therefore he can extrapolate to the sound. So, for example, one might begin with the sound of flatulence as a reference point.
From the sensation,
time.
The generation?
Right, you think of the sensation of flatulence, and then you extrapolate to the sound associated with that sensation, the kind of flapping. And then, building upon these basic blocks, one can begin to imagine what other sounds can be like.
But at the same time, that form of synesthesia, I don't believe it would exist if we did not feel and hear at the same time.
Yeah, the kitten whose eyelids are sewn shut at birth becomes blind. A deprivation of that sensation will kill the organs.
And it will remove our ability to understand those sorts of sensations, which is why it's so sad when so many of us have not felt meditation before, have not experienced those sensations.
Well, my friends, I must part. I must go prepare my talk in the conference. I'm arriving in Papua New Guinea right now.
Well, good luck there, Professor Levine, and I do hope that it is an enriching conference, and we look forward to hearing some of the new theories that are being
propagated. I will definitely bring them back with me. My paper this time is specifically about the demon Lilith, mentioned in the Talmud, and she is the sort of demon of temptation, of sexual temptation, who appears to many men at night in dreams.
That sounds very, very enlightening and spiritually fascinating and interesting.
All right. Goodbye, my friends.
Namaste.
Thank you. Masalam, Professor Levine. And to all of our listeners, if you'd like to call in or if you'd like to carry on listening, please feel free to do so. The number is 617-253-8810. And our operators are simply itching to use their power.
Yes, it's amazing that anyone who has a certain ability or who has some sort of power always strives to use it. Now, of course, for example, and many of people have probably noticed this to their great annoyance, there are those who have the ability to pull you over and give you a speeding ticket. And of course, there are those great police officers, those just wonderful men who do their duty wonderfully and keep us safe and, you know, are just there for us as a society. And then there are those people who you can feel their arrogance, that no matter what their occupation is, that they just swagger up to you and they let it be known that they are powerful over you, that there is some sense of power that they have over you. And of course, it can be a frustrating experience, but it's good to remember that we are all one, and that we are all brothers and fellow human beings. And sometimes our brothers and ourselves, we forget our way, and we forget how to treat others kindly, and that we just need a little bit of patience. Patience and forbearance, and that eventually we will be whole again.
It's so cold in here, and I really wish it would stop raining.
In your soul?
Here in my soul.
With time, Dr. Jolas.
Time is an interesting thing. It seems to change everything except for itself. Why? Once again, if you'd like to call in, our number is 617-253-8810, and we can observe time unchanging together. Marhaban, you are on the air.
Hi. I'm sorry about your rainy soul and that you're so cold.
Thank you. Thank you, caller.
I listen to you almost every week, and I often wait and think, well, there'll be a subject that you're discussing and that I will find it well, not just interesting, but something I can talk about.
Is something, yeah.
And often I don't find the right subject.
Well, caller, you know, sometimes we'd simply be happy to be with you. You know, there is some, you know, there's an expression in my language that people are clothing for one another, that you know, we can just be warmed by each other. And so if there's something that you'd like to discuss, I'm sure we'd be happy also to shift gears.
I don't have anything in mind, but I just sort of wait, and then the time goes by and I don't call, because I just don't seem to be able to fit in with Papua New Guinea or you know.
Well, caller, it's just
subject.
Wonderful to hear you call in any case, and to just hear your voice and hear. You seem to have some sorrow in your voice.
Well, I would like to communicate with you, and I'm very sorry that you feel so cold, and I wish I could be your thermal underwear and warm you right up.
You do, and you are.
Oh, good.
And how are you keeping warm?
I'm quite cozy here with my cat. We're cozy together. And I dress warmly when I go out. I'm sort of enjoying everything.
Well, and that's the important thing in wintertime, is to just keep that bright, open mind, that in this day and age, we do not run the risk of you know, of dying due to lack of warmth or lack of food.
I mean, that risk is there. There are people who are taking those risks, but fortunately, none of us. But I keep whistling.
You were talking about whistling.
Yeah, I don't stop whistling, and people complain. They tell me, you know, Dr. Jalis, please stop whistling in my ear. And I carry
on.
You
never whistle on the radio. I never hear you whistle.
I'm not sure that it transmits well.
Well, perhaps you can sit in one corner
and whistle away.
Yes, try.
Whistle a happy tune.
What shall I whistle?
Whistle something from your town.
From my area. None of the tunes are really very happy.
What? Did your mother used to sing you a song you could whistle?
Let me think.
My mother used to sing, "You are my sunshine."
Well, that's really lovely. That's one of these tunes that is in a major key. I'm trying to think. The ones that I'm thinking of, you know, Arab music, it's almost all like the closest key is harmonic minor, which has that very, very exotic flavor. But it all sounds sort of slightly sad, I think.
Well, Dr. Jalis, sometimes I recommend to my patients that they need to listen to something sad when they're feeling sad, that they need to
embrace it, really.
Yes, and then they're finally able to release it.
Mm-hmm. But sometimes the thing to really make a sweet dish is just a dash of salt.
Will you whistle on the radio?
I would be happy to. I'm just thinking of the right tune.
Something simple.
Something simple. I'm not sure. Aurora, do you have any suggestions? You've heard me whistle.
You were whistling something that had so many trills in it. And you said it was something about this Egyptian woman who sang... I can't remember exactly, but it was beautiful.
That must be Kalthum. Kalthum, an Kalthum song. So I should stand in the corner,
yes,
and whistle. Why not carry on with the discussion and I'll
pretend we don't notice them over there in the corner. We don't notice
this
them.
This is actually the first time that I've ever seen Dr. Jalis somewhat nervous.
He's embarrassed.
He is.
Maybe he wasn't prepared.
I certainly wasn't prepared.
Oh, we caught you off guard. Oh.
No, I'm just... It's really a challenge coming up with the right thing.
Well, pucker up, because pretty soon the time is over.
time seems to do that.
Yes.
I believe he's stalling now.
No.
Pucker away.
No, I'm puckering.
I can't hear you.
No, I'm here. I'm changing microphones. Should try. Should we turn off the music there, or?
Yes, let's do that. Enter a state of silence.
A state of silence. It makes it all the more terrifying. Let's see what we have.
Beautiful.
That was beautiful. That was very, very nice.
And his face is red with the joy and shame of having performed well.
Simultaneous joy and shame. No, I think there was at least one flat note there.
I didn't hear it. It was very, very beautiful.
Thank you.
Sounded
thank you,
sort of exotic.
Yeah, that harmonic minor, I think that key really brings that flavor out. But the Arab keys are, you know, they are on quarter notes. You know, I mean,
know quarter about steps. Music, or I would have caught half an hour ago. But that was very pretty. And does it have words?
Yeah, it does. The song is it's very tragic. The song is about it's called The Ruins, and it is about you know, a woman is singing to her heart, and it's not clear whether it's to her heart, like her actual beating heart, or if it's to, you know, a lover, a lost love. It's very unclear, but she says, "Oh my heart, do not ask what came of desire." And the words she uses, well, there are a lot of double meanings and symbolism. Mm. It was a vision of dreams, and so it vanished. And it goes on. She sings about her love, and it, you know, the key changes, and she speaks about a beautiful time of innocence and how things were when she played, when she was young, and
it's beautiful, and thank you very much. Lovely.
Thank you for forcing me.
Good night.
Good night, Colin. Namaste. Well, we're almost out of time here, aren't we?
We are. It's astonishing how time plays these tricks on us so quickly, disappearing. Aurora, thank you once again for joining us this evening.
Well, thank you, Dr. Jalas. As always, it's been a pleasure.
And thanks also to all of our callers tonight, and to all of our listeners who cowardly did not call. I'm Dr. Jalas Sakran here on WMBR 88.1 FM in Cambridge and Music for Human New Age Talk Radio, with an emphasis on you. We are here every Friday at 7, including next week, where we may be starting at 6. So stay tuned for that. Thanks. Stay tuned for Massachusetts Bay in Response. Ma'a salama.
Points for safety.
Number one.
cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two,
look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three,
cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four,
cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians and unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.